We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Heyo, welcome into the CHGO White Sox podcast, coming to you live from Studio B of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm your host, Sean Anderson. Alongside me, the full CHGO White Sox crew in the Bad Company t-shirt. That's Vinny Duber, our CHGO White Sox beat writer. You can follow him at Vinny Duber and read his latest piece about Colson Montgomery up at allchgo.com. And the man in the middle is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him at Eknerwall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. You can follow the show at CHGO_White Sox, the man who thinks it's post-game, Joey Spafis. You excited to be on White Sox?
You know, I was actually trying to fix that right now, and I'm just off my game. I'm off my game.
What time did you show up here?
No excuse.
There it is.
Showed up
Boom.
At 12:15.
Boom. I was here at 12:15. I did not see you at 12:15.
You were in here. You didn't see when I walked
oh,
in.
Oh, yeah, right. All right. Well, anyways, we got a full show for you today.
And it's Sean Anderson, the guy that likes to make my mistakes very public. Hopefully, Jake Flanagan, the man himself, is not listening right now.
Thank God we don't have HR. You know, I mean, there's no one. I can bully you all I want. Elijah Evans is going to join us for future Sox.
Elijah's like, what am I getting myself into?
We won't bully Elijah. And then we will talk or hear from Paul Janisch, the director, the farm director.
Yes.
Okay. Right.
Director of player development. You can call him the farm director. I usually call him farm chief. I think that, you know, that's a nice and short way of saying it.
Okay. Yeah. The farmer.
Yeah. Well,
the farmer.
That was a different guy on the south side.
He batted ninth for the Twins.
Yeah.
Or wait, is this
Ed Farmer? Yeah.
Oh, that Farmer.
I am Ed Farmer.
And then we'll talk a little bit about the upcoming series on Friday, starting Friday, as the Sox take on the Cardinals. And we'll also talk a little bit about old friend Jose Abreu being sent to rookie ball, not triple A ball, but rookie ball. Oh, he's still here.
There he is.
Look at you. Good job, Ben. And I think we are going to be joined by Elijah right now. So, again, Elijah Evans works for Just Baseball Media and also does prospect content over at Future Sox. I believe it's called the Call-Up, but I could be completely wrong. He hosts a great podcast with Jeff Cohen of AAA Charlotte for Future Sox. Elijah, why am I off with your podcast? What's the podcast name?
What's going on? The Future Sox podcast is the roundup that I do with Jeff Cohen, and the Call-Up is actually Just Baseball's prospect page and prospect podcast that I cover and help social media and all that different stuff.
I'm blending the two. So the roundup with Jeff Cohen and Elijah Evans, you guys do a great job. It's usually on Sundays, and there was a great spring training piece with Elijah where he talked to Nick Nastrini and Jordan Leisure as well. So make sure you check out Elijah's work. You can follow him at Elijah EvEV8 over on X/Twitter. What's up, Elijah?
Appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me on. I'm excited to talk some prospects and just, you know, look towards the future, right? Because none of us enjoy watching the White Sox right now, so we might as well enjoy some of the prospects.
Exactly. And the biggest prospect for the White Sox now is Colson Montgomery, now closing in and as a top 10 MLB prospect. But there's still some worries after the slow April. Are there concerns on your end for the player specifically right now as he's facing, you know, his first month at AAA?
Yeah, so one thing that I tend to try and remember when it comes to Colson Montgomery is the fact that he doesn't have that many games under his belt. Like, I think the expectation from a lot of White Sox fans is that he's going to be up this year for good reason, because he's incredibly talented and we've seen strides of a really advanced player. But at the same time, this is a guy who missed a large portion of last season. He ended up only playing in 37 games in Birmingham and then was immediately put in Charlotte this year, which is, you know, the AAA level for a guy who's doesn't have that many games, right? He had less than 100 games in 2022, only 37 games in Birmingham, and then immediately to Charlotte this year. So with Colson, there's a little bit of concern with the strikeout rate. I know that I've heard a lot of people mentioning that this season, but at the same time, like, this is a guy who needs time and there's no reason to rush him because this team isn't competitive, right? Like, if the White Sox were competing and they needed a prospect to put them over the hump, that's a different story. But with Colson, like, there's no rush. So my opinion on him is just patience, giving it time. I can tell he's trying to work on some things at the plate, try and tap into a little bit more of his power. So with that is going to come some strikeouts. But at the same time, this is someone who had one of the best approaches in all of minor league baseball last year. He walks at a high clip. He knows how to pick his pitches that he can do damage on. And I'm really not worried about him long term. It's just going to take a little bit of time.
And Elijah, I was just wondering, like, yeah, he is young, very young for AAA. Are the White Sox just being extra aggressive with his promotions, or he actually deserved to be at AAA and that's the best thing for him?
I think it's somewhere in between, probably. I think it is a little bit aggressive, in all honesty. I kind of expected him to start in Birmingham and then quickly move to Charlotte. But at the same time, like, he's ready. He's advanced. He knows the game. He's already got the approach of a 25-year-old for a 22-year-old guy who is still in an early part in his career. But we saw last year, like, his general sense of himself in the box is better than almost everybody at the AA level. So I'm okay with him being in AAA. It's just, let's not try and rush it past that. Like, it's okay to spend an entire season or most of the season in AAA. There's nothing against that. So I'm fine with him being there. I just think they need to not try and force the issue from there.
Elijah, the last time the White Sox did a rebuild under Rick Hahn, you know, big trades that brought in big name prospects. This time, Chris Getz really only had the one opportunity to make that sort of trade over the offseason with Dylan Cease. But early returns from Drew Thorpe and Jairo Iriarte have been pretty good. How are those guys doing down in the minor leagues?
Yeah, better than I expected, I'll say. I was high on both those guys, and they have both exceeded my expectations by a large margin right now. They look phenomenal. The two of them both look like legitimate major league starting pitchers, which is great to see. Thorpe is the guy who, you know, the floor is incredibly high with Thorpe. You're going to get a quality start from him pretty much every time he steps on the mound, and that's been the case so far this year in Birmingham. He pounds the zone. He knows how to pick his spots. His command is up there with the best minor league pitchers in the game right now. And honestly, like, he's pretty ready. I don't really know what else Thorpe has to do in AA. And the issue with Charlotte, right, is Charlotte is such a hitter friendly place that, like, someone like Thorpe might get hit a little bit there in ways that he wouldn't even in Chicago. So I'm fine with Thorpe going up there for a bit, but, like, he looks the part right now. Like, if it was me, and I'm a big fan of promoting and just letting guys work at the major league level, Thorpe is someone who should be up for the entire second half of the season, in my opinion. I don't see why he wouldn't. He looks like a legit starting pitcher. I don't think he's an ace, but I think you're getting a guy in Thorpe who could be a middle rotation guy for a decade plus. Like, he's got that type of floor. And then when you look at Iriarte, the stuff is excellent. Iriarte encourages me when I watch him pitch right now. You can see the elements of a guy almost like a young Dylan Cease. I've mentioned that before. Like, you can see the stuff. It's just going to take a little bit of time for him to find consistency and command with it. So he's had a few games this year where it's been like, oh, the walks get away from him, but he still gets out of it because his ability to limit hard contact is so strong right now, and his stuff is up there with almost any pitcher at the AA level. With him, though, only 22, the command is still an issue, right? So I have no problem keeping him in AA for the majority, if not the whole season, as opposed to Thorpe, who, like, just doesn't really have anything to prove there. Iriarte's stuff is playing, but at the same time, I do want to see his command continue to progress a little bit. His last start was really encouraging yesterday, 7 innings and only one walk yesterday. So for him, it was like, that was his most efficient start of the season by far. And I think it's going to come with time, but it is going to take him a little bit longer than Thorpe.
I was pumped to do the minor league recap. We just started this 2 days ago, and it was great to cover Drew Thorpe's 22 swings and misses, and then the next day, Jairo Iriarte's 17 swings and misses. So it's at least fun to see how Birmingham is producing. At least on Iriarte, what is his pitch mix right now? Is it mainly just fastball slider, or does he have a third pitch that you feel like, you know, makes him a true starter?
Right. So Iriarte definitely, he prefers the fastball slider. What's nice about his fastball is it's more of a sinker, right? Like, it's got a lot of vertical break on it, and it's the type of pitch that has a little more depth to it than, you know, most fastballs in the system. He does have a changeup that he's working with. It looks good at times. He's definitely had some really nice changeups here and there, and I think he threw even more of them last year. But it is going to take a little bit of time to find that consistency with the changeup. He definitely leans heavily on the slider right now because it's a great pitch. It moves really well. There was a few strikeouts yesterday where he just made guys look silly with it. So it's encouraging to see that slider look so good. The changeup is getting there, though. It's definitely a pitch that's worth keeping an eye on, and something that if he can find that consistency with the changeup, then you're looking at a guy with three, you know, potentially plus pitches with the fastball and slider already being so advanced.
Elijah, let's stay right there in Birmingham, and a guy that I get asked about many a time because of who they traded him for, it's Jake Eater. Like, he struggled last year when his White Sox debut, and now this year he has an elevated ERA, but I saw his last start was kind of promising. How's he doing now this year, and what's his projections?
Yeah. I get why people talk about Eater a lot, and I understand, you know, the situation with him being traded for Berger, right? But Eater's got a lot of upside still. I really do believe in the arm talent. It's just last year was a shaky one, right? Like, you're looking at a guy that had surgery and then had a foot injury, and then it was just every part of his body was not fully in sync last year. So I understand why people were frustrated with it, and I get it was not what anybody wanted to see. But at the same time, like with Eater, I still believe in the stuff, and it looks a lot better this year. He looks more comfortable on the mound. He looks like he's healthy. And this year for him is really just going to be about getting those innings and feeling 100% healthy compared to last year, where you just could tell that he wasn't right the entire time he was with the White Sox after the trade. His last start was definitely his best so far. Eater had eight strikeouts, in his last start, six full innings after not getting out of the fifth in any of his first three starts. So a big improvement in the last start from Eater. All kind of every start he's made has looked a little better to me, just from a perspective of his stuff. And then, you know, the walk rate's going to be an issue, right? Nine walks now, I think, in four starts, but it's still coming along well. I do believe in Eater. I know people want to see like immediate results. And I know it's tricky because he is 25, right? But I think he's a guy that we could see really blossom, you know, later this season as he gets more innings under his belt.
To kind of make another comparison to the last time the White Sox were kind of in this position, yeah, it was so easy to make that kind of lineup of the future, right? To project, they got a guy at every one of these positions. We'll be able to see all these guys in a little bit. The position player side is not like that right now. And past Montgomery and Edgar Caro, who's tearing it up at AA right now, you know, who is that next? Who are some guys that can be maybe projected to be part of the, you know, lineup on the position player side, you know, 2-3 years down the road? Is Brian Ramos in the same tier as Montgomery and Caro in that regard? And then who else can we talk about when it comes to those types of guys?
Yeah, definitely. Ramos, coming into the year, I would have said Ramos is kind of at that Edgar Caro level, not the Colson Montgomery level, but maybe at the Caro level. Ramos struggled to start this year. He didn't look like his timing was there. He kind of has had the really elevated strikeout rate. But with that said, in his last six games, eight hits, including two home runs. So Ramos is starting to look like himself again. He really just didn't look like he was comfortable at the plate in the first few weeks of this season. But I do think he looks much better right now and looks like he could at least be, you know, a piece of the future. I don't know if he's your penciled in third baseman like I might have thought last year, but at the same time, I do think that Ramos is still kind of the current plan at third base beyond Moncada, right? I think trying to get him up this year might feel a little rushed now based on his start of the year, maybe at the end of the season, but I do think he's a 2025 option. And then beyond that, the one guy that really stands out to me so far this season is Brooks Baldwin. He has just torn the cover off the ball this season. Really just a guy that, you know, can play literally any position aside from catching. His versatility and his hit tool is something that's going to make him really valuable moving forward. I think there's a world where he actually could become the starting second baseman come 2025. But at the same time, having a guy that can play all over the field with the contact skills that he has could be even more valuable in kind of that utility role, right? So Baldwin is someone who I kind of think is going to become a 2025, whether it be a second base, whether it even be shortstop, if Montgomery's taking his time a little bit more, a utility guy, play some corner outfield, play some third base. Like, he can play anywhere, which makes him really valuable. And then beyond that, also in Birmingham, right? The Birmingham lineup is super fun to watch right now. Wilfred Varus is someone that I have my eye on and have had my eye on for a while. Last year, he kind of broke out as someone who reached Birmingham and was better in Birmingham than he was in Winston, which is not something you see often, especially the Southern League in Double A is typically a pretty hard league to hit in. And Varus went from High A to Double A and actually improved his numbers on the second half of the season. And then this year, you see him doing exactly what he does. He hits the ball all over the field. He hits really high exit velos. He's got a ton of power. And it's just going to come down to his swing and miss. He chases a lot. He strikes out a lot right now. But Varus is super young and someone that I think come next year, 2 years even probably, you're looking at a corner outfield DH type of guy who is still figuring some things out, but has a ton of upside at the plate.
And with Colson, you talk about his readiness. Where do you see him defensively? Do you think that he is a shortstop? Are you fine with him making as many errors as he, you know, is in Charlotte, as long as he's getting that, you know, the kinks out and learning at an advanced level? Are you fine with the Colson Montgomery being a shortstop experience, or do you think it's, you know, the more you've seen at him at shortstop, he's likely a third baseman?
Yeah, I think right now, there's no reason not to let him work it short, because the White Sox organization, as we know, is not winning anything this year, probably not winning anything next year. And he's the guy that you want being your shortstop. There's nobody else in the system right now that you can look at and say, that's a shortstop of the future. So because of that, you let him work there. I don't see any reason not to. And you hopefully have a guy like Brian Ramos who you want to be your third baseman too. So for right now, Colson, he's getting there. It's not a perfect product. He definitely has work to go, but there's a lot of shortstops, you know, bigger shortstops these days in Major League Baseball that might have struggled a little bit earlier defensively and figured things out with some time. So right now, I want him at shortstop. I don't see any reason for him not to be at shortstop. He does get a little choppy, a little robotic sometimes in his movements. He needs to get a little bit more fluid with his hands still, from what I've seen. But I do think that he should get every chance to start at shortstop and to stay there, at least for this year, at least for next year, probably. Once you get into next year, if he's at the major league level and he's really struggling there, then you consider it, right? If Ramos isn't pushing for time at third, then you kind of look at him at third and say, maybe he does fit at third a little bit better. But for this season and even next season, I want him working at shortstop because he has the ability to make it happen there.
The White Sox the last couple of years have been, in my opinion, like kind of bad in development. And also their minor league system has been ranked very low. How's it this year? I've heard it's been much improved because of these names you've been naming. I hadn't heard before, and now these are in the top 30 prospects. It seems like it has more depth. But how is it as far as the rest of Major League Baseball? Where would you rank it yourself?
The system is better than it's been in quite some time. I have to say it's definitely at the best point it's been since the beginning of this, you know, rebuild, whatever you want to call it. But it's in a really good spot. I think the pitching depth in the White Sox system is up there with, you know, the top 5 to 10 teams in baseball. The hitting is lagging behind a little bit, but generally speaking, there's 10 plus pitchers, 15 pitchers in the system right now that you can look at as legit potential major league contributors, which is something that we haven't had in a long time. I think generally speaking, like from a pitching perspective, I don't think the White Sox system in my life following them has ever been this good. So I'm very encouraged by the pitching. The hitting still has some ways to go. There's definitely some intriguing pieces, but there's also a little bit of a lack of depth, especially with the infield. There's not a ton of guys you're looking at that are like this, that are lower in the system that are significantly projectable. I think in terms of Major League Baseball as a whole, like it's borderline top 10 right now. I think the Sox system is in that 10 to 15 range right now, pushing in top 10. And I think, you know, with a few more trades, cashing in on a few guys this trade deadline, you could be looking at a consensus top 10 system in baseball.
Whether it's with the White Sox one day or not, how long till Sergio Santos is a major league manager?
I would love to see that. Honestly, I've heard nothing but great things from him. I talked to him a little bit in Arizona this spring. He seems like he's really got his head on his shoulders. He knows what he's doing. I wouldn't be shocked if he gets a role sometime in the future.
You guys want to feel old?
Amari.
You're going to tell me how old Elijah is?
Well, we have to let Elijah go because he has class.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no, I'm good for now. I'm good. Oh, boy. I'm good for now. We got a little bit.
Oh, no, you're fine. No, we really appreciate you joining us, Elijah. Yeah. I guess the only other question I'll throw out there is, you know, talking about, you know, how they're close to top 10 or maybe even in that top 10 with their prospect rank. You talk about how it is pretty heavy on the pitching side. Is there a concern that it's too pitching heavy, or do you think, you know, Chris Getz really isn't having been on the year, been on the job for a year? Do you think that that's something that's just going to grow and develop as Chris Getz grows and develops as a GM?
Yeah, I'll put it this way. I think you'll see a very hitter-focused draft this year because the pitching depth is there. It's really abundant. Like, it's not – if you don't mind, I'll mention a few other guys. Like, there's some other younger guys. Like, you know, a Mason Adams has just broke onto the scene, 13th-round pick, who has just been nothing but nails since his first professional season last year, doing the same thing in Birmingham this year. You know, late-round guys, right? And then you've got someone like Aldrin Batista. I'm not sure if you guys know that name, but he's, you know, acquired from the Dodgers last year for international signing money, like not even for a player. And Aldrin Batista turned in like a 2.6 ERA in single A last year and has like a 1.1 this year to start the season in Kannapolis. So this is a guy that is, you know, super young, projectable arms. And that's just throughout the entire system, really. There's like multiple starting pitchers at each affiliate that are legitimate prospects and look like they're going to continue to rise. And there's almost a logjam right now with guys who probably should be a level higher, but are blocked by a rotation at the next level. When you've got guys like Nestrini and Cannon and Charlotte, you're then in a situation where the guy like Thorpe in Birmingham can't go to Charlotte because there's guys in his way. And that trickles down through the entire system. Aldrin Batista should not be in single A right now, but there's not a spot in Winston because those Winston guys are waiting to go to Birmingham. So the pitching system is so deep right now that I think you're going to see every trade and the draft this year focused on hitting. I expect that first rounder, the fifth overall pick, to be a hitter for sure. I don't know exactly if it'll go prep or college, but I think you're going to see in the first 5-6 rounds, at least 3 or 4 of those. I think 4 of the first 5 will probably be hitters just because the system is kind of lopsided almost a little bit too much right now, but I don't think it's an issue that, you know, can't be corrected still.
The door open for one more question. So AJ, who's a huge fan of your work, says, is it prudent to not rush guys to the majors this year and burn a year of control this early into the rebuild? I know you mentioned Thorpe is a guy that you'd like to see in the second half of the 2024 season. Are you worried about control time, or are you thinking, you know, Drew Thorpe, let's get him as much experience as possible now because this 2025 team could possibly be, you know, more competitive than it is right now?
The way that I look at it right now, with the scope of Major League Baseball, especially on the pitching side of things, I just don't want to waste bullets. There's no reason. Like, I get the team's not competing, and I see that, right? But the value of getting X amount of starts for a guy like Nestrini, Cannon, Thorpe this season in the major leagues could do wonders for them come next season and 2026 when the team is actually competing, right? So I understand the idea of service time, but when you have every single pitcher in Major League Baseball dealing with arm injuries these days, and you have a system that's really deep with pitching, let's just see it. Like, I don't see the impact of a Brad Keller or a Mike Clevenger with the White Sox this season when you can get these guys innings that are valuable and can teach them how to pitch at the major league level, because we don't know how long arms are going to last and we don't know when a guy's going to go down with Tommy John or any other type of arm injury. So especially on the pitching side of things, the hitters I'm okay waiting for a little bit more, just because I do think some of those hitters like Montgomery, Ramos need a little bit more time, generally speaking. But on the pitching side of things, like beyond Eric Fetty and Garrett Crochet, is there anybody else in the rotation right now that we really care about? Because I think the answer to that is no. Is that safe?
No, I don't really care about those. Eric Fetty, I just want him to pitch well so we can get shipped somewhere else.
Yesterday's post game was me trying to kick Chris Flexen off the team. So
exactly. It's just I don't those guys getting starts over a Nestrini, over a Thorpe, over a Cannon, it's fine for right now because it's May. We just hit May. But come June, July, like, get those guys innings. Don't waste their arm at a level where they don't need to be right now. Like, Thorpe has a 1.2 ERA in double A right now, and that was only because he gave up 2 runs on a homer yesterday. Like, he had a 0.75 going into yesterday's game and has just continued to make double A hitters look silly. I don't want to waste his arm when we have no idea what the future looks like, when he could be getting innings that'll be really valuable come 2026 when this team is hopefully competing.
Great argument. Great work, Elijah. We really appreciate it. You can follow Elijah Evans on Twitter at ElijahEvEV8 on Twitter. We appreciate his work from Future Sox, and we appreciate his 20 minutes now, and we'll do it again a little bit later on, Elijah.
For sure. Thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it. I'm always happy to talk prospects.
Yeah, go hit those
books. Go to class.
Yeah, seriously.
I will. Have a good one, fellas.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we'll hear from Paul Janisch, the White Sox Director of Player Development. But first, we want to let you know about our friends over at CD1 Price Cleaners. Customers save over 30% on their dry cleaning bill by switching to CD1 Price Cleaners. And it's in the name, you pay one low price for any garment to get clean. The same one low price each time you visit CD1 Price Cleaners. Other cleaners charge a different price for every garment type. Plus, they have upcharges, and you may pay a different price each time you visit. No, not at CD1 Price Cleaners. And CD1 Price Cleaners has your order ready the same or next day. Other cleaners take 2 to 4 days to have your clean garments ready, and you'll get a text once your order is ready to pick up. CD1 offers a ton of variety of services like dry cleaning. They'll wash and fold your laundry. They'll wash those massive blankets and comforters. They'll tailor and alter your clothing, and they'll clean your area rugs or any leather that you have if you own some fine leather goods.
Good to know.
Visit chgo.cdone.com, or the link is in the description, at chgo.cdone.com. O-N-E.com. Once you're there, you can pick from an in-store coupon or online pickup and delivery coupon options.
And speaking of that commercial, I literally went to CD1 yesterday, dropped off my stuff at 12:49. They sent me a text at 12:15 telling me today that my clothes are ready to go.
Less than 24 hours.
Literally, yeah. You go to chgo.cd1.com and you have a coupon on the front page there, and you can use it on your first visit there.
Appreciate it.
It's great.
You know what I really like to do, Vinny? After I cash in my CD1 coupon, CD1 Price Cleaners coupon, I like to drink a beer.
A celebratory dry cleaning beer?
Absolutely.
Of course. Well, guys, I don't know if you've been outside today. Mm. I think you have because you had to get here from the car into the office. But it's going to be like 80 degrees today. And that means it's summer in Chicago, folks. And that means you can have yourself a delicious summer shandy, just like Herb's doing right next to me. If this was on real ice, I'd be having one too, I think. Guys, Line & Kugel's makes a variety of delicious, delicious beers. You've got the Summer Shandy. You've got the Berry Vice. You've got the Honey Vice, which is made with Herb, real Wisconsin honey. Yep. Did you see any of those real Wisconsin bees when you were up there in real Wisconsin?
Not there. Yeah, it was beautiful weather, but they didn't show up.
The bees weren't buzzing?
No.
They were out of town. They were in Phoenix.
That's true.
I was in Milwaukee, so maybe they didn't make it down from Chippewa Falls yet.
That's true. They're enjoying the waterfalls up there in Chippewa Falls. But there's so many delicious Line & Kugel's varieties you can try. And, of course, when it's summer, have yourself a summer shandy. If you're going to a picnic by the shore on the shores of Lake Michigan, if you're going down to a tailgate at Guaranteed Rate Field, heck, if you're just going to go up to Wisconsin and paddle around in a canoe, you need a nice collection of summer shandy cans or bottles to have with you. Bottle's probably not good in the water, but they come in both varieties. So guys, flavor life, simple moments with Line & Kugel's, the official craft beer of the Chicago White Sox. Go to liney.com/CHGO to find delivery options near you. That's LEINIE.com/CHGO. Or pick up Line & Kugel's pretty much anywhere they sell beer. Line & Kugel's, flavor the moment. Celebrate responsibly. The Jacob Line & Kugel Brewing Company, Chippewa Falls.
Yes.
Mercy.
Mercy.
Joey's getting it. He knows what's up.
Good job,
Joey. I unmuted my mic right at the beginning. I was waiting for that. Mercy.
Yeah. And I'm surprised we didn't hear Cody from over there, because Christopher Morel hit a homer in the Cubs game and made it 4-0. And last time Christopher Morel hit a homer, he was screaming his head off. So
I remember that. He was actually screaming. Shocked. I told you all.
Cody goes through the emotions. I couldn't do it. Like, he goes from the highest highs and the lowest
watching
lows.
Watching the game with Cody versus watching with Herb and Sean, at least this season, well, Sean, actually, you got pretty emotional. Like, you were pumped up for that Andrew Benintendi homer late the other day.
Oh, of course I was. Come on, it's my guy.
Cody's, like, his level of emotion is a little bit high.
I mean, I will say this one. I'm surprised that this guy is the one calling out Cody's behavior, just because, I mean, I've seen you screaming at umps in the third inning of a 0-0
game.
It's
from dumb stuff. I scream from dumb stuff, not from great plays. Great plays are expected. I love those. Dumb things, like when the umps mess up or you throw a ball to Byron Buxton right down the middle, I get mad.
All right. Let's hear from Paul Janisch. Vinny wrote the article up at allchgo.com covering Paul Janisch's words on Colson Montgomery. We do have some Paul Janisch on Colson, some Paul Janisch on Oscar Colas, some Paul Janisch on Edgar Caro, and Jake Eder. Since, I guess, you had questions about Jake Eder and everybody's stopping you on the streets when you're at Jewel and CD1 Price Cleaners, you know, about asking you about Jake Eder, why don't we hear Paul Janisch on Jake Eder and his start of the 2024 season?
Honestly, with Jake, everybody would tell you, like, it's about him throwing strikes, and he's done that thus far this year, so he's having success. I think it's kind of a little bit of a deep breath deal, right? He gets traded last year, and there's been some injury history and that kind of thing. You know, he had a little bit of the awkward deal during spring training this year. So I think getting to Birmingham, getting his feet on the ground, a consistent routine. We mentioned John Eli. I think he's doing a really good job with him. But Jake's on the ball really well. And it's a real left-handed arm. So obviously health is the biggest deal with him to kind of over the course of a season make sure that we maintain. But there's reason to be excited about him for sure.
And you know, I mean, I'm excited just because he's another lefty. If we can have Noah Schultz, Garrett Crochet, and Jake Eder in the same major league rotation as a left-hander, I would be thrilled. So I'm all for Jake Eder, you know, hopefully figuring things out. He has had four starts in Birmingham. One of them had five earned runs, but outside of that, you know, no more than two earned runs in all the other three. So, I mean, he's been okay.
When people are stopping you on the street asking you about Jake Eder, yes, you just go, you can go to baseballreference.com just like I can.
it's been waned a little bit because Jake Berger has been injured down there in Miami, so you're not seeing those constant home runs that Jake Berger hit up here and then when he got down to Miami. So every single time, people are like, oh, goddamn Kenny Williams. But at the time, I was happy with the trade, and I'm still kind of happy with the trade because at the time, Jake Berger was redundant for the White Sox, and I thought this would be his ceiling last year, and he's continued to hit down in Miami, but of course, he had the injury bug. But if Jake Eder turns into a major league pitcher, I'm fine with the trade.
Well, and I'll say this too. You know, Elijah was some tremendous information there during that interview that we just had with him. But, you know, he said at one point, you know, they have it's kind of lopsided the amount of pitching that they have. I get what he was getting at, you know, allocation of resources and all. Mm-hmm. But there's no such thing as having too much pitching. There's no such thing as having too many guys that could be part of a major league rotation or a major league pitching staff one day down the line. So I think that the thing that was so good about all those trades last year, and then you can throw the Dylan Cease trade in there too, because the two top guys that brought back were pitchers, mm-hmm, is just throw it all at the wall. Get as many guys that you are excited about from a pitching standpoint as possible, because whether it's Nick Nastrini or Jake Eder or Kai Bush or Drew Thorpe or Jairo Iriarte, they're not all going to be all-stars.
Nope.
But get as many of them as you can to increase your chances that you're going to get an all-star caliber pitcher at the end of the day. Trading Jake Berger for Jake Eder, sure, I get why it upset some people, but getting something that's a little bit more than a lottery ticket, right? A very well thought of pitching prospect to give yourself another run at trying to get somebody in that starting rotation, not a bad thing at all.
And at least with their surplus of pitching prospects, I'm kind of okay with that strategy, if that is a new strategy for Chris Getz, because I know we don't hear much from Jerry Reinsdorf, and I don't think White Sox fans needed to hear this specifically from Jerry Reinsdorf, but it was illuminating that Jerry Reinsdorf, as an owner, is not going to spend $300 million on a pitcher, right? So if they are going to have good starting pitching, it's likely going to be developed in-house. So I don't mind taking shots of, you know, 15 to 20 guys who you really like and, you know, give him the best of runway if you are going to be a team that goes out and spends on hitters in the free agent market because those guys play 162 or whatever.
Well, but also, like, it does, I think that's a very good point that you made, but I think that the thing is, it doesn't matter whether you are the kind of team that wants to spend on pitching big money or not. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the Dodgers, who spend a gajillion dollars all the time, are focused on getting as many pitching prospects as they can in their system as well. So I just think that it's probably, regardless of what situation you're in, the more pitching prospects you have in your system, the better.
And yeah, we've seen this year, too, where pitchers are falling off the table at a rapid pace. So having a bunch of pitchers available, even if they're mid to good, is a great thing for the White Sox. As you see with the White Sox, they traded Dylan Cease away and got two good arms back. The White Sox could do that if they're in the position that the Padres are in right now in the future to go and get a top-of-the-rotation arm because Jerry's not going to pay for that. You can just go and get a person like Dylan Cease who's making little money and only 2 years left on his contract.
And Ian's in the chat checking out his guy, Elijah. We appreciate it, Ian. He's saying, if Chase Burns is available, I would be shocked if they don't take him, even with the system pitching depth. Jerry, don't pay for no pitching. Thank you, Ian, for that.
Ian obviously didn't go to class like Elijah did because that is just that is a sentence that is grammatically just a nightmare.
Hey, Ian Eskridge went to the greatest school in Wheaton. Oh. Or in Illinois, Wheaton North.
Okay, there you go.
He's a little older than I am.
You gave it away.
Yeah, I did. I'm sorry. Future Sox guy, though. Great people over there. Future Sox. Him, Danny Miller.
I try to give context clues by saying he's watching his guy, Elijah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love him.
You know, little context clues for the people out there. But, you know, Ian bringing up Chase. I would be thrilled with Chase Burns. He's pitching out of Wake Forest. He's got a 100-mile-per-hour fastball. There's two pitchers that are currently in the top seven. It's Hagen Smith of Arkansas and Chase Burns of Wake Forest.
We know the Sox love them hogs.
Yes, they do. Oh, boy. They love one way too much than they should.
Wow.
But it seems like the top two are pretty set. Charlie Condon, third base slash outfielder, kind of Austin Riley-ish from Georgia. He's hitting, like, I think he set the Georgia record for home runs this year so far. And then Travis Bazana, he's a second baseman from Oregon State. Okay, no remarks there. That's fine.
I mean, yeah, the last one we got was kind of terrible.
There you go.
Still terrible.
I was waiting for something. But it seems like those two guys will likely be 1-2. And then there's Nick Kurtz from Wake Forest. He's fourth. And then Jack Caglione. He's a first base slash left-handed pitcher.
Yes.
Looking at all those guys, I don't really love Kurtz or Caglione. I kind of like Braden Montgomery. He's an outfielder from Texas A&M. He's a switch hitter. He's kind of come on late so far. But with the Sox being fifth, I would hate to kind of see a prep player, and I would like to see them, with what Ian's saying, go after a Chase Burns, go after a Hagen Smith, if they're available.
I mean, it'll be perfect to get Braden Montgomery, put him with Colson Montgomery and Braden Shoemake off that infield.
That would be confusing. Braden to Montgomery to Montgomery.
To Braden.
To Braden. All right. Let's go into more Paul Janish here. Let's hear about the man, the myth, the legend, Colson Montgomery. Here's Paul Janish on Colson Montgomery's slow start and their current thought on Colson's work at AAA.
I think Colson's in a good place right now. Obviously, he's at AAA for the first time. It's a new level. He's had a bunch of success in the minor leagues offensively. He's at a point right now where it's a combination of a couple of things. He's only one step away from the major leagues, right? So if we're going to ask him to play that position at the major league level, he's got to continue to play defensively, continue to develop, and not just even just from a physical standpoint of playing day in and day out, which he's been, to his credit, and obviously you guys know Jurich down there does a really good job, but him and Jurich have a really good relationship, and Colson's been very adamant about wanting to be in the lineup pretty much every single day. So I think those things to consider are some of the bigger parts of his development right now, but he's in a good place. He got off to a relatively slow start. I think we got to remember, too, he's really young. He's obviously very talented. Very, very little concern at this point for Colson. I think he's going to be just fine, and he's doing what he needs to do.
What's the fine line between continuing his development and wanting him to be here? Is it a daily, weekly, monthly discussion?
Yeah, I just think it's important at this juncture with him, who's obviously everybody considers a huge part of the deal going forward for the major league team. I think the macro view is very important. Obviously those decisions ultimately are up to Chris, but understanding that we need to do what's best for Colson, and as we've seen even recently with some really young prospects going to the major leagues, like, It's not an easy thing to evaluate. It's not an easy thing for a young player to come up and do. They get so much exposure now at a young age. It's a little bit of a moving target. So I think the best way to answer that is just making sure we maintain a macro view for Colson and understanding that, look, when he comes up, hopefully it's going to be for good.
What sort of confidence level is he giving you guys that shortstop is going to be where he's able to play at the major league level?
Yeah, he hasn't blinked on that. I don't think there's any question in his mind he's going to play short at the major league level. So to his credit, he's a competitive kid. Obviously, we know the background with the high school basketball and all that stuff. He's a quiet competitor. He may not be as vocal, as outwardly as what some guys are, but he's competitive for sure. So I think internally he really wants to play shortstop at the major league level, and he's going to get every opportunity to do that.
And I mean, that's the biggest thing that I took away from Paul Janisch is there's no pressure. If he is failing it for a year in Charlotte at shortstop, oh, well, we're going to give him that runway. Like, there is no pressure for him to be hitting certain marks. And if they need to change his defensive position later down the road, they will. But right now, they see him as a shortstop.
Yeah, I mean, I think Elijah provided some great context there by illustrating exactly how few games Colson has played at the minor league level. But then, too, I go back to what we heard from Josh Barfield last year when he came over after being the farm director in Arizona, talking about, listen, there's no one way that you should be moving people through the system. Every single player has his own way. And I think with Colson Montgomery, you've seen somebody who, yeah, probably would like to have played a lot more games. You know, it meant he wouldn't have been injured or wouldn't have had some of those, you know, health issues or physical issues. But he's a guy who, in that limited time, showed he was ready for the next step. But at every step, it might take you a different time to show that you're ready for the next step, right? And so he's at AAA right now. Things haven't gotten off to the, at least statistically, great start that we saw him, you know, at previous points during his pro career. But, you know, if it say it takes him a full year, say it takes him most of this season, you know, to the end, to the middle or end of August, let's say, to really get it together, what's the rush? What's the rush? The White Sox don't need him here now. It's very important for them to bring guys up when they're ready. And that's why I thought that they bring up Nick Nastrini, they bring up Jonathan Cannon. I expected to see them here for longer because the idea would have been, we're not going to bring them up if they're not ready. And not only that, in each of their first starts, they looked really good. Mm-hmm. In each of their second starts, they struggled, but that's to be expected with young players. So, again, those guys are going to get more time eventually, and I guess I get the reasoning for why they're doing what they're doing, even if, you know, we might lean more toward what Elijah was talking about with those two guys specifically. But in terms of Colson Montgomery, there is no pressure. You're absolutely right. When it comes to the position that he's going to play, you want him to be a shortstop. You draft him to be a shortstop. See if he can be a shortstop. He has not given you any reason yet to freak out and say, we got to move him to a different position. So let him continue to develop. Let him see if he can handle it and cross that bridge when you come to it.
I would love him to be up here at the end of the year, but if he's not ready, he's not ready. You know, last thing you want is a person that comes up here, fails miserably, like Jackson Holliday did, and then has to be sent back down. It's not a good thing to have that type of failure at the major league level because maybe your confidence is shaken. Let him do all that stuff down in the minor leagues. And when he actually has that breakthrough and you see he's like, okay, there's nothing more he can learn here. Let him fail at the major leagues in a more productive way. But if he goes and falls flat on his face, making a lot of errors, striking out a lot, not seeing the ball like he should in the major leagues, and then you can tell he is not ready for prime time, then you can lose that player. And I know people are looking at the ETA, it says 2024. It might be 2025. And if it's 2026, as Vinny said, who cares?
I'd be surprised if it's 2026.
He'll be, what, 24 then?
Yeah, but I mean, he's already at AAA.
I understand that.
I mean, I think giving him a full year at AAA is probably enough. I mean, I think there's probably real concerns and red flags if they're waiting until 2026.
Maybe he's not ready. What if he's not ready?
That's raising a red flag and concerning.
Hey, man.
If he's not ready, that's concerning.
Progression and development's not linear, so he might need extra time.
Right, but
he's
like
much younger than the players down there.
I think the 4 months that's left in the season should be enough time.
It should be.
And even, I mean, we saw him play fall ball last year. I don't know if he goes and does that again, but maybe we see him in the Arizona Fall League and, you know, hitting a homer in the All-Star game. I'm not sure. We got to take a break anyways. Want to let you know about our friends over at Prize Picks. They're the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America, and they are the easiest and most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Since it's baseball season, I have a prize pick entry for tonight. I got CJ Abrams to record more than half a base and Corey Seager to record more than half a base. Seems pretty easy, right? You know, I mean, we're talking about superstars or future superstars at the shortstop position. CJ Abrams, one of them, all right? You know, Colson Montgomery, a future one, and everyone's comparing Colson Montgomery to Corey Seager. So that's where my mind went, the shortstops. But go check out Prize Picks. They are fun to play. You could add all your favorite players from the diamond to your Prize Picks lineup all season long, whether it's strikeouts, RBIs, or first inning runs. Take your pick of more or less and add them to your Prize Picks lineup today. It's very easy. You can get an entry
entered in under 60 seconds. So go check out the fun at prizepicks.com/CHGO and use code CHGO for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/CHGO and use code CHGO. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Playoffs are continuing in the NBA right now, and you're now this weekend you have the Denver Nuggets going against the Minnesota Timberwolves. But if you recall back in February, the Bulls had an epic comeback right here at the United Center versus those same Minnesota Timberwolves who look like world beaters right now. You know who caught that game?
CHGO takeover.
Damn right. Look at my guy Joey. And Joey was there. Like, it was looking bad early in that game in the third quarter. And then those guys stuck it out and had a good time even to that point, but then saw that epic comeback. You don't want to have FOMO. The last thing you want to do is like on May 28th and say, man, Herb, Sean, and Vinny were at the White Sox game on Memorial Day, and the White Sox did this, that, and the other. I wish I was there. Today, you, on May 2nd, can go to CHGO and become a diehard and get some discounted tickets and join us for one of our takeovers on May 27th. I think it's June 9th versus the Dodgers, and also, no, August 9th versus the Cubs, and June 24th versus the Dodgers. So right now, go to allchgo.com, get to the diehards section or the events section, and get your tickets to join us so you don't have FOMO. Even though this team is bad, we're going to be sitting in 147, having a great time down the third baseline. Sean and I think Vinny will even venture down and say what's up to you real quick.
Make an appearance.
Yeah, he was like, hey, I'm still working here, but Vinny's going to give the tip of the cap. What better time than spend in Memorial Day at guaranteed rate, drinking some Line and Kugels, than spending with me, Sean, and Vinny at 147. So, allchgo.com, the diehard section. You get 20% off of your takeovers, the tailgates. You get a free t-shirt, 20% off of merchandise in the future. And you also get to join CHGO's Discord, where we all talk to all these beautiful people, like my guy AJ in the chats right now. So, allchgo.com/diehards to become a diehard today and join us for the takeover on May 27th when the White Sox take on the Toronto Blue Jays.
Boom. There's a reason we're John Scherfin's favorite White Sox podcast. Big fan of your work.
Okay.
All right. Let's go to Paul Janish, who had more comments. We have a clip on Edgar Caro and a clip on Oscar Colas. Let's start with Caro and keep it prospecty, and then we'll go towards the major leagues, and we'll also preview a little later on in the show the upcoming series against the Cardinals and a little chat about Jose Abreu. But here is Paul Janish on Edgar Caro.
He's just like really good. He's played well. Again, going back to contagious, that team's doing a good job. I would say kind of what I said about Brooks, about Edgar, like the team's pitching extremely well. There's obviously talent on the staff, but between Edgar and obviously Turner's catching as well down there, Michael Turner, but Edgar's done a, for a 21-year-old catcher in AA, he's got a lot on his plate, and he's doing about as much as we could ask him to do. And if you read between the lines, you know, with regards to like pitchers meetings and the rapport between the pitchers, both Spanish and English speaking pitchers, obviously Edgar's Latin descent, but he speaks English well. That's been what I've been most impressed with. I'm glad he's doing well offensively, but the intangible piece that is kind of imperative to the catching position is what to me has really stuck out so far this year.
You mentioned him being a young guy at that level. I mean, is that kind of the expectation moving forward too, is that he'll be a young guy at AAA and maybe a young guy when he gets to the minors too?
Yeah, I mean, I would argue like success at AA is kind of a precursor for guys regardless of age. So he's having success. I, some of those decisions are gonna from a roster makeup here, they're gonna be up to Chris and all of us as a unit collectively moving forward. But I just don't want to get too far down the road with regards to Edgar's playing really good in Birmingham right now. And I think it's important that he continues to develop that rapport with a bunch of that kind of that pitching group, because I think there's reason to believe that a few of those guys are going to be part of the next wave here. So we'll evaluate that as the season goes. For right now, we just need him to continue to stay healthy and kind of keep doing what he's doing.
All right, Edgar Caro has been fun. And I think just looking back at that trade deadline, I know Rick Hahn obviously has a pretty stinky reputation, but I mean, that was one hell of a trade deadline. Killed. You talked about Jake Eater, you talk about Edgar Caro. Just they got a ton of guys there.
Just killed. I mean, they got what, fired like a week and a half or 2 weeks after that. But their final act as White Sox front office people, even though Kenny gets credit and or blame for the Jake Berger trade, which I think will work out eventually with Jake Eater. I think they killed it because those talents they gave away in Lucas Giolito, not really good. Either the teams he played for last year, now he's hurt. I mean, this year you're getting good Lance Lynn, but last year he was horrible for the White Sox and pretty bad for the Dodgers. And you got all this stuff back. And not even to mention Kendall Graveman for Corey Lee, who we talked about yesterday. Corey Lee looks like a major league catcher, while last year he didn't look like a major league catcher at the plate. And he had a strong arm, but really I didn't see a lot except for his leadership. So, yeah, those guys killed it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what we were talking about, to be able to set up at least a something to be excited about in terms of future pitching is very important, considering you just saw what happened with the last rebuild. It was very heavy on position players being the top of that list. Obviously not entirely. Kopech, Giolito, they were a part of that too, but and Cease, of course. But, you know, now you're looking at pitching maybe carrying the day for this next wave.
Well, and two, the Caro deal, I know that it was Lucas Giolito and Reynaldo Lopez for Caro, and then the kind of not throw-in, because Bush was highly thought of, Kai Bush, but he wasn't impressive in Birmingham last year, 670 ERA in, hey.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That's where he used to work. Yeah. 670 ERA in 41 and two-thirds innings pitched. So far in 21 and a third innings pitched, a 127 ERA. Obviously flipping what he was doing last year. The walks are still pretty high, 26 strikeouts, 212 walks, but he's not allowing any runs, only 3 earned runs. So, I mean, that they're just getting great returns. So I'm excited as a Sox fan for that reason. I just wish it would transfer a little bit over to the Major League team.
But patience, Sean.
The good Guns N' Roses song. also, Elijah bringing up Aldrin Batista. I don't know whether to call him Buzz, because Buzz Aldrin, or the animal for his last name being Batista.
Dave Batista.
Yeah. So, any thoughts there? Do you guys prefer Buzz, or
that will go
the animal?
That will go over people's heads, Buzz Aldrin.
Well, what you could do,
you lead it on the
moon.
Understood.
You could tie it together. Buzz Aldrin, Dave Batista played an alien in the movies, right?
True.
Just call him Spaceman.
Okay. All right. Spaceman it is. Liz, do you want to yell at the moon with me? All right. Let's look at the upcoming series verse. Oh, wait. We got Oscar Colas stuff. My bad. Okay. Here is Paul Janisch on Oscar Colas giving you a different thought of what the White Sox think of Oscar Colas from a voice that's not Pedro Grifol.
Oscar's very talented. At the end of the day, he really hasn't been in the States that long. He's a really good-natured guy. I think he needs to continue to work. And, again, from the standpoint of just like being a professional, same guy every day, I think that's one of the things that he needs to work on. The ability piece is there. At the end of the day, it's just consistency. And I know Pedro talked about that in spring training with regards to from a defensive standpoint, but also obviously from an offensive standpoint. And Oscar's working. He's doing a really good job. He's led a different path than what a lot of guys have. I think it's important to acknowledge that. But from everything that we ask of him, he does. So I think there's reason to believe he's going to continue to progress. And again, obviously he's been in the majors this year, but trying to put a time frame on, you know, he's going to be ready in a certain amount of time is very difficult to do. I think he'll show us that as much as we want him to.
As an organization, you have to kind of look at situations like Oscars and go, maybe we need to learn from showcase situations. Maybe we need to understand when players don't play a lot that there's not an off and on switch when they come.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's it's very evident, right? Like, people are different, players are different, like the aptitudes are different, the learning curve is different. You know, again, to highlight Oscar's, his path is different than most guys, and so all of those things I think play into it. And at the end of the day, like, you just run him out there every day and you continue to like coach him. And I will say that about the staff in AAA, and Charlotte does a really good job, and you know, they lean on him. If he does something, you know, makes a bonehead play, or whether it's base running, whether it's defense, whatever the case might be, like, they lean on him. And to his credit, he's been pretty receptive to it. So yeah, it's a good question, and there's no, unfortunately, it's a gray area. It's not black and white. And again, to Oscar's credit though, he's working and he's gonna be fine. I wish I had a swing. I would have made more money.
Thank you, Paul Janisch. I also wish I had Oscar Colas' swing. I don't know if I would have made more money than Paul Janisch's major league career, but
you'd made more money than you this. Have now. Yeah right.
For
yeah.
sure. Good to hear about Colas. I do think, though, that his ETA, because it seems like he'll be up again in 2024 at some point, is likely August, after they trade Tommy Pham.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can probably just throw the ETA out the window, it kind of sounds like, from what you're hearing from Paul Janisch, from what you hear from Chris Getz and Pedro Grifol as well. It's like, this guy is still figuring it out down there. And again, as we just talked about with Colson Montgomery, like, it's okay. You know, at least at this point, it's okay. You know, I mean, obviously the expectations were dramatically different at the beginning of last season for Oscar Colas, because they gave him the everyday right fielder job. You assumed he was ready for prime time. He very much was not. But now that the expectations are what they are for the team, again, what's the rush, right? And if I think most White Sox fans have probably been like, all right, that's a loss. Chalk that up as a loss. He's still down there at AAA. He is still developing, believe it or not, and he can still show the White Sox he deserves either a chance in right field or a job in right field, or he deserves to be, you know, thrown out of the playbook. But I don't think that any of that decision can be made right now. He just has to keep playing, and eventually they're going to come to a point where he shows them what his path is.
Yeah, as a contrarian, I want him to do as well as he can for this team, because last year I thought the White Sox, not treating him poorly, he probably earned the demotions that he had, but I thought that they made a special example out of him and sending him back down twice. So I hope he just hits the ball as hard as he can down in Charlotte, which we know is a bandbox, and then eventually comes up here in August and does the stuff that they wanted him to do last year, this year. So he could be the White Sox right fielder of the future, because he profiles as such. Just he hasn't, you know, done it on the field as yet.
Yeah, we will see with Oscar Colas. All right, let's move into everyone's favorite topic, the 6-24 Chicago White Sox.
Yes.
Is it 6-24?
I believe so.
Is it 6-25?
I think 6-25.
Because they played 31 games.
Yeah, it's 6-25. You gave them too much
credit. I gave them
much
too much credit.
Yes. The worst record in baseball.
I'm just double checking my tweet from yesterday.
Yeah, they're worse than the Miami Marlins.
They are?
Yeah.
I don't think that's true.
They are 6-25.
But yeah. I don't think that's true. I think Miami's worse.
Miami is 8-24.
Yeah. Look at them. Yeah, better.
Oh, okay. That's better. Okay. Yeah. I'm stupid. How did that switch in 2 days?
Because the White Sox got swept.
Yuck. All right. Anyways, White Sox are playing the 14-17 St. Louis Cardinals. They will be heading to St. Louis on Friday. Brad Keller versus Sonny Gray, old friend.
Oh, no.
Eric Fetty versus some guy named Lynn.
Not good for the White Sox.
Lance Lynn, and then Crochet versus TBD. Gibson's going to start Monday for the Cardinals. Steven Matz has been pitching before Gibson, so maybe it's Steven Matz, a left-hander, but I don't think we can confirm that.
They got a whole bunch of guys down there in St. Louis.
Yes, they do.
Veteran old dudes who are pitching well right now, actually. So Sonny Gray, top of that rotation. I think he's got a sub-2 ERA. Lance Lynn, what happened? How did he come good again? In St. Louis, that St. Louis air, probably sleeping in his own bed every night, because I think he lives in Southern Illinois and just drives to St. Louis every night. So he's got like a sub-2.5 ERA this year. And if they bring Steven Matz, I mean, what, former Met? He was a Met like a long-ass time ago. I guess so. And we know about the two guys they have in the corner at first and third base, and Goldschmidt and Arenados. So I'm not looking forward to this series, because the White Sox should be competing with this team, but that pitching staff right now for the St. Louis Cardinals is doing the job. I don't know if the White Sox will get a lot of hits down there in San Luis.
I'm excited to see Lance Lynn, just because I know he'll probably be amped up and excited to face a former team, a guy with probably, you know, a chip on his shoulder always. He just seems like that sort of guy that always is looking for some motivation.
And theoretically, they didn't say his name as one of the people that was a bad clubhouse guy. But if I were him, and I was one of the people who left last year, him, Giolito, Tim Anderson, et cetera, I'm like, are they talking about me? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, cool. Here you go. Here's seven innings. Here's all fastballs. Enjoy yourselves,
Tim,
White Sox.
Tim wasn't traded at the trade deadline. Nope. Yasmani wasn't traded at the trade deadline. And I know that was the incident that was somewhat reported or somewhat might have happened, whatever. I don't have confirmation. But, you know, was Lucas really a part of the clubhouse issues? Reynaldo Lopez? I mean, he's out in the bullpen. Same with Kelly and Graveman. So, I mean, like, it might have been Lance Lynn. Because here's the thing. Steve Stone is going out and calling him to say, hey, go eat a couple salads. Like, that's kind of odd for a broadcaster, especially with these two broadcasters, what we've seen, just the loyalty to Jerry.
Yeah, that was totally out of pocket by Steve, and I'm glad he apologized to Lance because that was bullshit.
Yeah, it was bullshit. And Lance Lynn has been surprising. His fastball value has a positive 6 value right now, according to pitching run value. His mile per hour has dipped down. He's sitting 92 with his four-seamer, 91 with his sinker, and 88 with his cutter, but I mean, knowing the White Sox and seeing how mightily Paul DeJong struggles with fastballs, I assume that, you know, Lance Lynn's going to sit there and throw 80% fastballs, and one's going to move this way, one's going to move that way, and one's going to go up, and it's going to be a typical, you know, what's his old nickname?
Big Bastard.
Big Bastard. Yeah. It's a typical Big Bastard start for him. All right. Anything else from the Cardinal series that's interesting you?
I mean, Brad Keller's pitching tomorrow. I don't know how exciting that is for White Sox fans, but he is in the starting rotation beginning tomorrow. So, you know, we talked earlier and have a lot about Nastrini and Cannon. They're not here anymore. Brad Keller is here. Mike Clevenger's going to be here next week, you would imagine. So this is your new look and very veteran-heavy White Sox starting rotation.
And I would assume tomorrow will be another bullpen-heavy game because you haven't had a lot of Brad Keller in either the minor leagues or his first appearance with the White Sox. So I wouldn't expect 6 innings out of Brad Keller in his first major league start for the White Sox.
We will see. All right. The final thing I wanted to talk about, Jose Abreu getting sent down to rookie ball. Surprising, obviously. I mean, it's just mostly surprising that a guy with $60 million on his contract is accepting to go down to rookie ball.
That's good. That's humility. That he understands that he's not right, and maybe he approached them or they approached him. And that takes a lot of looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, you know what, I'm not right. And yeah, my checks are still going cash, brothers. So going down to rookie ball in Florida, I'm in with it to get right. It's very unorthodox to do this, especially as a hitter. We've seen other players do this. Alec Manoah did it last year, and I think Roy Halladay did it early in his career and to good success. But it's been very unusual for a veteran who's won an MVP in his career to go back down to the lowest level you can and work his swing out. And the Astros need it because they are really bad right now. And Jose Abreu, what is he hitting in the hundreds? Or is he even on the interstate yet?
I don't think
he's like he's no, just he has a handful of hits, fewer than 10.
Yeah, he's just really, really bad, and he was really, really bad last year. And White Sox fans are like, hey, Aprils are usually tough for Jose Abreu, but all last year in Houston was pretty much tough for Jose.
7 hits, 0.99 batting average.
Not even on the interstate. No. Bad.
So I mean, listen, Jose was a guy who, you know, no matter what was going on, he was very vocal in his team-first mentality, right, when he was here in Chicago. So he obviously had big expectations signing with Houston, right? This is a team that never doesn't play in the American League Championship Series. You know, they're in the World Series all the time. I'm sure he thought he was going there to be part of the reason that they would get back to that, not just last year, which they did, this year and next year, which he's under contract for as well. It's very possible that it's just a, hey, this is the best way that I, Jose Abreu, can figure out how to help this team right now. He's obviously detracting from what they're doing. Not the only problem down there in Houston, but maybe he thinks if he can go down there in the warm weather of Florida for a little bit, and not that it's cold in Houston, but the warm weather of Florida for a bit and get his swing right and get his timing right, he can come back and be far more helpful later on in the season.
I mean, he is 37, so it might just be like a steep fall off the table because when he was with the White Sox, even though that last year's with the White Sox wasn't as powerful as he usually is, still hit a lot, still walked a lot, still had a value to the team where losing him was like, oh, man, we're going to lose that solid bat in the lineup. And he went to Houston, and it's like, oh, White Sox fans, you guys were kind of right. And the White Sox were kind of right for not giving him $20 million a year because he fell off the table quickly. And that's very unusual for baseball players.
Well, I mean, not when you're 36. And that's,
I mean,
and
like,
that's
off the table like that, like, well, immediately. But, I mean, like, it's gradual, but it might go a little quicker when you're older.
Herb's saying maybe a little bit more of a, you know, trip down the road than the trip down Splash Mountain.
Oh, my God.
I guess. I just, with StatCast coming out with bat speed, it's pretty clear that the 36-year-olds just don't have it anymore. I don't know what happens when you go from...
Except Tommy Pham.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, like, that's... I don't understand how his exit velocities have consistently stayed this high. Like, usually you see a natural dip. It's like with Trey Turner's speed. Like, Trey Turner has turned 32, and he's the only 32-year-old with, like, 30 feet per second sprint speed time. Like, it's insane. Like, some of these guys are next-level athletes. Abreu, I don't think he's that next level athlete. I think he was a big, strong guy, and I think that big strongness has slowed him down to a point where he's just not a major leaguer anymore. I don't know.
Sad.
It's sad. It sucks. I mean, it didn't happen with Frank. I mean, Frank still had some juice. Yeah. I mean, Frank came back his first time against the White Sox and hit two dingers. Poor John Garland. All right. That's Vinny Duber, our CHGO White Sox beat writer. You got any fun predictions for the weekend, or are you just going to see us on Sunday?
Fun predictions for the White Sox for the weekend?
I think Eloy Jimenez hits two homers on this.
Oh,
in this three-game set.
Yeah, I could see that happening. Okay. Yeah, but he's got to get that ball in the air.
I think he will.
He had those couple home runs on that last road trip, and then they came home, and he was just back beating it into the ground again.
GIDPs. He needs to get the ball in the air. The warm weather probably will help him out down there in St. Louis. I hope he does well. I hope him and Lance Lynn have a nice battle. And then he talks shit to Lance Lynn.
Is it already 110 degrees in St. Louis?
Probably. Sticky.
All right. That's going to do it for the CHGO White Sox podcast. We will be back on Sunday with a post-game show to wrap up the Cardinal series. That's Vinny Duber. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. That's Herb Lawrence. You can follow him at Ecknerwall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. Thank you to Elijah Evans for joining us from Future Sox. Make sure you follow him at ElijahEv8. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. Follow the show at CHGO_White Sox. Follow Joey Spathis at...
Joey Spathis.
Wow, look at that. That's great. Appreciate Joey's work. We appreciate everyone hanging out with us. Hit the thumbs up button. Goodbye. All silly.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.